Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, along with Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated, Big Ten writer. Dustin, we talked about it before we started recording. We get to talk about some actual football. Week one. How'd you enjoy it?
Yeah, this was great. We had I know in the Big Ten we didn't have a lot of really good matchups, but turns out that even some of the games that we weren't excited about turned out to be pretty interesting. So we got some things to talk about today, Jim.
We absolutely do. First of all, you talked about some of these games just not being interesting, and I've got some of these scores in front of me. I absolutely hate this, Dustin. Nebraska 40-7. Purdue 49-0. Iowa 40 points, 40-0 over Illinois State. Maryland 50-7 over UConn. Yes, UConn is really ready to come up to a Power 4 team. Illinois 45, Eastern Illinois nothing. Some of these games, and those aren't, you know, it's one thing, Ohio State, we know they're going to blow out Akron. But some of these other games, my goodness, why do they bother playing these?
Yeah, I know. It's my longstanding, I guess, kind of plea has been, let's just play an exhibition game where you can play a low-level MAC or an FCS team and not have to waste people's money. But I guess at the same time, you start off the year 1-0, nobody's complaining. But it's always interesting after the first week of the season, because you do mention like Purdue, Illinois, Iowa, blowout wins. I think all three teams shut out their opponent, but it's all three of those teams played FCS teams. So what do we really learn about those games? Yeah, they looked good, but that's how you're supposed to look in those types of situations. So like you mentioned, you expect that from the Ohio State. You expect that from Washington, but you don't necessarily expect to see that. And you don't know what to take away from those games when you see teams like Purdue, Illinois, and Iowa put up those big numbers.
I'll tell you what you take away from it, Dustin. Nothing. Nothing.
Correct.
Well, I think my favorite thing is then seeing either stuff on sites where the fans are going crazy, or even worse is when folks from the media, look at this, Iowa put up 40 points with the new offensive coordinator. The offense is fixed, Dustin. No, it's not.
No, I don't think so. That first half was brutal, with a lot of U's between the R and the T. I mean, that was a rough half. They did get it together. I think it's a positive that they did score 40 points. But again, this is a team we're gonna find out a lot more about because they're gonna play Iowa State in week two. So,
when Iowa starts out 6-0 at halftime against Illinois State, there's still issues going on there. And probably by the end of the game, you know, bigger, stronger, faster, deeper, you're going to put up some points. But it won't happen, and it can't happen because I think some of these teams, they need to get some wins. You know, if I'm a 500 team in conference, 4-4, but if I schedule 4 cupcakes, I get 8-4 and I keep the alums happy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, valid point. And I'm going to point out another team that we kind of talked about as being a sleeper team coming into this season was Rutgers. They win 44-7 over Howard. And again, that's a team you don't take much away. But how happy are they that they didn't schedule a big time opponent? Because I think they had more than a dozen players that were slated to play either probably on the two deep that didn't play because of injuries. Now, part of that is on Greg Schiano and the coaching staff that maybe they ramped up things a little too much in fall camp, but injuries happen. Had they played I'm just going to throw names out there. Had they played a North Carolina or a Virginia Tech or Boston College or something like that in week one, are they starting off the season 0-1 simply because they're not healthy? So I think there are some benefits to having that a week one game, but you also just don't put much stock in what you see other than this is what they're supposed to look like against those kind of FCS lower level MAC teams.
Exactly. And that's where I wish either the conferences or the NCAA could get together and say, hey, look, play 9 conference games. I'm talking to you, Southeast Conference.
Yep.
Which gives you 3 out of conference games. 2 of them you have to play a team with at least a pulse. I'm not saying you go schedule Georgia and Alabama, but play a team with a pulse. And I know at Penn State, they will often say football finances the rest of the sports, including like intramural sports, and they need the extra home games. Well, you know what? Give yourself one cupcake, okay? One team, get your Delaware or your Bowling Green, get them a payday, let them come into Beaver Stadium, but make the other 2 out-of-conference games. Like I said, the last couple of years, Penn State has played Auburn home and home. They've played West Virginia now home and home. They had Pitt on the schedule for a little bit. How about just giving us one of those? And those are games they should win, but at least as fans, there's an interest in the game. And I think as a coaching staff, you'd at least learn a little something from the game.
Right. And as we talked about last week, you know, with the 12-team playoff, not necessarily one loss is going to kill you. So you could go out and schedule. I mean, like, this has been on the books for a while, but USC and LSU, I mean, I don't think anybody thinks LSU is necessarily out of the playoff race, but how big is that win for USC to get that in week 1? So I think there's going to be more incentive. And I know we kind of disagree on how it stands, but I think there will be more incentive to go out and schedule some of these higher profile games. Cause like you said, we only had a few. Minnesota, give credit to them. They went out and they scheduled North Carolina. They played that game at home, ended up losing. But I think, and even though this is for the worst for Minnesota, I think that we found out more about Minnesota than probably we know about other teams. Maybe it's just beneficial for the media people, Jim. Maybe it's just beneficial that we know we have a better idea of what we're talking about than the coaches. But yeah, that it was a pretty ho-hum weekend. But I will say there are a lot of happy fan bases in the Big Ten. And I have to admit, I laughed a little bit at the expense of the Golden Gophers. Because right now, as we talk, Jim, they are literally the worst team in the history of the 18-team Big Ten Conference.
Yes, they're the only team that lost. Otherwise, the Big Ten was undefeated. And let's talk about a couple of these games. First of all, I want to start with this LSU-USC game, which was Sunday night. And Dustin, what an enjoyable game. Enjoyable game to watch. And it reminded me why I love college football.
Okay. Yes.
Great game. No real rooting interest in it. I was a little bit surprised. I thought LSU would win the game. But this is where you and I probably have that differing opinion that you alluded to in this game. For USC, it's tremendous because they won. I essentially think LSU is eliminated from the playoffs. Okay. Because going forward, if you look at their schedule, they have to play Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Alabama, Oklahoma, Florida, I don't know what you think of that, but and do you really think they could go through? At best, they're still going to lose one game, and I think they'll probably lose 2. And if they get 3 losses, I think they're out of it. And even at 2 losses, I think this loss to a Big Ten team will hurt LSU in a tiebreaker that might happen.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you in the fact that it might hurt them in a tiebreaker. I think I would agree with you on the point that I don't think LSU is going to be able to manage that schedule very well. So I think we agree on that. I think my point is there's enough meat on that schedule to where if they did get into a rhythm, there is still a path. If they went 10-2 and you got wins over, let's say the only other losses to Alabama, and you beat Oklahoma, you beat Ole Miss, UCLA, Texas A&M. They have to go to South Carolina on the road. We don't know how good some of these teams are or bad some of these teams are. I still think, but I think if you get through that rest of that schedule at 10-1 and finish the year 10-2, then I think you're probably at least in the conversation. So that's where I would say. Whereas if they would have lost to I don't know. Let's throw a rant. If they would have lost to Fresno State because Michigan had their hands full this weekend, if they lose that game, then you're probably saying you probably got to go 11-1 to get in. So that's why I think scheduling this type of game is more beneficial, just because of the meat left on the schedule.
It's a valid point. Let's talk about the actual game and what it means for USC, though, and the Big Ten for USC to win this game.
Yeah, I think that this catapults USC to the conversation of potentially into the Big Ten championship game. At least we talk about, you know, jumping the gun here, jumping the shark after week one, right? But I think USC's defense looked a lot better. That was a huge question mark we had for this team coming in. Was D'Anton Lynn the answer? I don't know that USC's defense is going to be elite. I think the LSU's offense probably went through some ups and downs and still is adjusting to being without Jaden Daniel. But at the same time, this is a much better US. It looks like a much better USC defense. When you look at some of the other things that happened across the Big Ten, Michigan didn't look great. Oregon didn't look great. Wisconsin didn't look great. So I was impressed with what Miller Moss did. I think they still struggled to run the football a little bit, but I think the biggest storyline is just the fact that USC's defense looks, at least in a one-game sample size, light years ahead of where it was last year.
And I think if you're a USC fan, you've got to look at this win and come to the same conclusion you did, Dustin. This is a team that could find itself in the conference championship game. And I real quickly brought up their schedule. Do you recall who their first Big Ten game is against?
It's against Michigan, yeah. At Michigan, I believe.
How big a game has that now become?
That's enormous. That's huge. And I think that this is – it was important for them to get a win, because now I don't know – you're going to feel that pressure going on the road in a Big Ten environment is obviously always going to put the pressure on it. But I think you play a little looser when you get a win over LSU, and you don't have to feel like we have to win this game. I think this allows them to play a little bit freer. And the fact that they put together a game-winning drive in the last 2 minutes – That's huge for the momentum of this I was thoroughly impressed with USC. And sometimes there's a little bit of fool's gold in these week one games with big wins and how good these teams are. But I was thoroughly impressed with what I saw from USC.
I was too. This is a good Southeast Conference team. Traditionally, we know that it's LSU to get that kind of win. And it's also, it's a good win for the Big Ten also. Yep. These cross games, that's going to help everybody else in the Big Ten with their tiebreakers. All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter one. Lots more to talk about. We'll hit it in quarter number two.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated. We're taking a look at the entire Big Ten. We started with USC's win over LSU, a great win for their program, really good win for the Big Ten also. But as you alluded to, Dustin, there were a few performances that weren't so good. And, my friend, I'm going to throw some kudos your way. You have been questioning this Michigan team. They played Fresno State. The final score was 30-10, but that was 13-3 going into the fourth quarter. Not exactly a stellar performance by the Wolverines.
No, and it was, what I think, 16-10 or 17-10 at some point. Like Fresno State pulled within a score. It was 24-10 or 23-10, and then Fresno State was knocking on the door to score before that Will Johnson pick six to seal the deal, basically, for Michigan. But Fresno State was in that game up until basically last 3-4 minutes. And I think what you take away from that is Michigan's defense is still really good. I think we can say that. But their offense is a nightmare. I mean, their offensive line is not good. They played two quarterbacks. I didn't think either. I mean, Alex Orgie had some good runs, but Davis Warren, I mean, it's such a drop off from what they had with JJ McCarthy. Donovan Edwards, he had 27 yards on 11 carries. Not a great day for who was supposed to be the best running back or one of the best running backs in the Big Ten. This is just a team to me that they've got a lot of flaws and a lot of areas to address. And they ain't playing Fresno State next week, Jim.
No, they are not. Well, let me ask you this well ahead of time. And yes, Michigan has to play Texas next week. But just looking ahead, we talked about USC beating LSU, Michigan squeaking by Fresno State. USC is going to be at Michigan. It's 3 weeks from now. That's USC's first Big Ten game. Who do you like in that game? And you're going to have the right to change your mind as we get closer. But who do you like in that game now?
Yeah, right now I would put it on USC because I think that their offense is light years ahead of where Michigan's offense is. Now, I think Michigan's defense will be able to keep them close, but I think also USC's defense has made enough improvements to where they're going to be able to keep that offense in check. I mean, this is Fresno State is a solid team. So this isn't like they were, you know, tooth and nail with an FCS program. Fresno State's a quality team, but when you're coming off a national championship season and you have to play Texas in week two and then USC in week four, you better have it together. And I just didn't see that. Again, the quarterback is an issue, but I think that the bigger concern is their offensive line play. There was nothing from that game where you just scream that they're confident. This was a team that was always in the hunt for the Joe Moore Award, which is presented annually to the best offensive line. And they just fell short. They couldn't create any holes on the offensive line. This is a team that you're supposed to have more depth. You're supposed to be able to push those bodies around. You're supposed to be able to run, even if it's a close game, you're supposed to be able to run against these teams. And they just didn't. So I give the edge to USC right now. And that could be, I don't want to say it's going to be a blowout, but like 10 points, 14 points. Is that absurd? Just think USC could go into the Big House after beating LSU on a neutral site and winning by a couple touchdowns?
Well, and again, think about this, though. Michigan has Texas and USC over the next few weeks. That could just put them away.
Yeah.
In September. In September, we could say Michigan has been eliminated from the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about. I never understood. I understand why they were ranked in the top 25. I think they will probably still be a top 25 team, I think. I don't know. But I never understood the hype in the top 10. There was too much of a drop-off to me. I guess we'll find out next week to see if they can, you know, hold their own against Texas. I think they're going to lose, but even if they hold their own and they are competitive in that game, then you maybe understand the top 10 ranking, but that they did not look like a top 10 team against Fresno State on Saturday.
Well, I think there's always the recency bias that they were national champions a year ago and they're Michigan. You know, it's like, yep. I don't even have to look at a scouting report. I don't have to look at a roster. I'm going to have Ohio State in my top 10. I'm going to have Alabama in my top 10, Georgia in my top 10. You just know by how those programs are that that's what you're going to do. And it often takes years or at least a couple years for you to change your take on those top teams. I'm looking at you, Clemson. Anyway, let's look at another team whose performance was certainly not what we expected going into this season. Oregon was looked at as like a top five program in the country. They played Idaho, Dustin, Idaho. Yep. And that was literally a 3-point game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of it. Some folks said, well, it really shouldn't have been that close. Oregon put up a lot of yards. They just didn't score points. What was your take on it? What really happened?
Yeah, if you look, and this is what's funny, because there were so many games on Saturday that we had to go back and watch it, right? Because I caught the, I saw 17-14 and was like, oh, we better flip over to the Oregon-Idaho game. So we caught the tail end of it live and went back and watched it. And people are right. You look at the box score, you would have thought Oregon won this game 42-7. Like, you would have thought that this was a no-brainer, move the ball, no problem, defense played well. But they a lot of self-inflicted wounds, a lot of failed execution, a lot of self-inflicted wounds, a lot of penalties. Their offensive line, just like I said with Michigan, their offensive line didn't play particularly well. I think, and the one thing too is Dylan Gabriel did throw the ball downfield, but again, this was against Idaho. They're going to rely a lot on jet sweeps, screen passes, bubble screens to run their offense. And that's going to be interesting to see how that fits into the Big Ten. I think statistically they were able to, they were able to move the ball, but they weren't able to capitalize. So I feel like I'm contradicting myself because I don't have a lot of faith in Michigan. I have a little bit more faith that Oregon's going to get it figured out. But this was a team that was starting a walk. I think it was a freshman walk-on at center. That's kind of a big deal. It's kind of an important position, Jim, as everybody, this guy that touches the ball every offensive play, right? So they've got some question marks on the offensive line too. So, and they got a big one coming up against Oregon State. I believe that's this weekend. So, you know, you said top five team. Everybody thought that. I still think they're probably in that top 10 discussion, but that was an atrocious performance. They got Boise State this week. I'm sorry, Oregon State 2 weeks.
That's right. That's right. Boise State. That might be interesting. And a little bit later in the show, we'll get into the upcoming schedule. Let's stick with the games that were actually played. And you mentioned Minnesota. They did schedule a nice game with North Carolina. I don't think either team was looked at as a contender in their conference. But again, you're playing a team with a pulse. Close game, kind of what you expected. I think what I liked is Minnesota missing their game-winning field goal and still setting off their fireworks.
It wasn't that fantastic. Talk about insult to injury, right?
And that's your home team, right?
Yeah. The thing that I took from that game was, as much as things change, they stay the same. And the biggest knock against Minnesota, and PJ Fleck, he's done a fantastic job since he's been there, is always a threat to win 8 or 9 games. He's kind of basically turned Minnesota into Iowa, and I mean that as a compliment, not as an insult, but on that same level, they just are way too conservative offensively. You thought when they went out and got Max Brosmer that they were going to have some semblance of a passing attack. 166 yards, 13-21, I think, was the final stat line for him. No touchdowns, no picks. Couldn't run the football. Were held to less than 2.5 yards per carry. This is ground and pound and clock management and kind of grinding that clock is Minnesota's calling card. And a lot of times that works, especially when you're playing those big-time opponents and those high-powered offenses. But at some point, you've got to be able to let it fly. You've got to be able to put up a lot of points. And there's a lot of frustration with how Minnesota continues to lose these types of games. That they had every opportunity to win that game. Special teams, gaffes, still can't throw the ball down the field. Running game wasn't good. And this is supposed to be a good offensive line. And again, we don't know how good North Carolina is. Credit to Minnesota for scheduling an actual opponent and kind of testing themselves in week one. But this looks like a team that's going to have to rely on its defense to win football games again, because the offense, at least in the first week, it just looks like it's the same old story.
They obviously failed their test. And let's look at some of the other games. I'm going to ask you about Penn State. I want to give ourselves enough time to talk about that. What other game stood out to you, either good or bad, for Big Ten teams?
Yeah, I think on the bad end, and we'll hold up on the Penn State conversation, but I think on the bad end, Michigan State, Aiden Childs, at times he looks like a guy who could you know, win you a big time game, but he was far too inconsistent. They win that game 16-10 against an FAU team that went 4-8 a season ago. Wisconsin, they needed a special teams muffed punt near the end of the game from Western Michigan to win that game. So I think that the offense for both of those teams still has a long way to go. Those were probably the two games that stood out most to me from a disappointing factor. I thought Wisconsin was going to be one of those teams that made a big leap from year one to year two. Maybe they still will. Maybe they're still going through some of those growing pains, but Tyler Van Dyke struggled again. At Michigan State, I thought Aiden Child struggled. Now Michigan State's defense is really, really good. I think that they are a talented defense. They were in the backfield. They got a lot of sacks. We'll see how it compares to some of these Big Ten teams that they'll play in the future. But those two teams, I think there's a little bit of concern. And then I'll go to Nebraska. And I think, again, how much do you take away from UTEP? But the fact that Dylan Raiola, freshman quarterback, kind of came in, handled that pressure, seemed to do that really well. Didn't seem to be too rattled. Made some freshman mistakes, but made some good throws to win 40-7. Jim, this is the first time they're 1-0 since 2019. So I think that they'll take any win they can get in that week one game.
And it's got to be exciting for them that this is hope when you've got a true freshman quarterback starting game one. That's what you're going to build around. All right, we've got lots more to talk about. We'll do that when we come back, Dustin.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking all things Big Ten football. We had week one. Overall, I guess it's a pretty good weekend for Big Ten, highlighted by the USC win over LSU. That was a conference helping game, okay? Now, the other cross-conference game was Penn State, West Virginia. Now, going into this game, Dustin, a lot of talk about West Virginia winning this game. It was pretty much everybody in the national media's upset pick. A lot of people had them not only winning or covering the spread, but winning the game. If you watch the pregame shows, I think everywhere they got lots of votes to win the game outright. You had the Pat McAfee factor. But when I talk to people outside of the Penn State world, my friend, there was one voice out there who said, you know what, Jim? I think this could be pretty much a blowout for Penn State. Mr. Schutte, do you know who it was who said those words?
I think he's on this program right now because I think it was me.
It was, my friend. It was a great call on your part last week. You're one of the few national people who looked at this game and said you thought Penn State would be the easy winner. First of all, tell me why you thought that and how it came to fruition.
Well, I thought that because it's kind of one of those things we talked about when you talk about you don't have to, it's kind of a blind test. You just kind of have faith that, you know, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, those teams are going to be in the top 10. I have that same faith in Penn State on the defensive side. I think that they're always, under James Franklin, they've always been a really good defensive team. So when they go into a game against a team that I would say, whether they're the same talent level or, in my opinion, much better from the talent perspective, I have no questions about them keeping another offense in check. That just comes with the territory. My questions were going to be on offense, but I thought that with the changes they've made, the offensive line that they have, it's almost like, to me, almost as if people forget that they have a really good running back in Nick Singleton, and they have a couple different guys that they can run with. And I think, to me, the big question was Drew Aller. Are they going to let it fly? And I think they did that a few times. 216 yards on 11. Completion percentage wasn't great, but 216 yards, 12.7 yards per completion, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. This is a really good Penn State football team. And the second, it's kind of hard to judge that second half almost. And this is why it's important to get off those fast starts. And I know Penn State out of the gate, 0-0 in the first quarter, but they exploded in that second quarter, got 20 points. And I think that's what people want to see from Penn State. Let's start this offense. Let's get it kicking a little bit earlier in the game. And you saw that, and that paid a huge, because after the, you never know what to expect after a 2-hour delay at halftime, inclement weather coming in kind of changes the dynamics of the game. Everybody's got a warm up stretch again. I think you take a lot more away from what Penn State did in that second quarter than maybe anything else throughout the course of the game. And defensively, they were just able to shut West Virginia down. They were able to hit some big plays. Again, this is a really talented roster. We'll see what continues to happen. I think Drew Aller probably needs to get a little bit more consistent throughout the course of the season, but overall, just an impressive performance from Penn State, and particularly that second quarter.
And I think one thing to point out that I'm not sure many of the national folks are aware of this. Here, you know, locally, we really are. A few years back, Penn State dealt with the same thing, a delay game with when they were at Michigan State. It seems like it only happens on the road. And they were unprepared for it. And they ended up getting upset by Michigan State, lost a close game late. And James Franklin, if there's anything about him, he's very process-oriented, plans things out. And I believe he even said after that Michigan State game, from now on, I'll have a plan for this. And in this situation, the weather forecast came out ahead of time, and it was pretty much rock solid right on, which was there would be the potential for this kind of delay in the second half. So they got the first half in. It was at halftime that the delay began, and they were much better prepared. They were prepared by bringing food in. They knew they were going to be in a small locker room. They started taking out chairs and tables into the hallway to be able to spread out. Players took pads off, got themselves comfortable. It just seemed like, you know what? We've gone through this before. We were ready for it. And they took the second half kickoff and marched down the field and scored a touchdown and essentially ended the game right there.
Yeah, I mean, just impressive out of the gate. And if there's anything I've learned about James Franklin in his 10 years at Penn State, it's he is so meticulous and he learns from his experiences. And that doesn't always mean that he's going to win the game or that he's going to always put his team in the best position. We're all still humans, right? But he does learn from those experiences, and it paid off in that West Virginia game, because having done that, that's probably something you don't, it's kind of like locking your keys in your car. You don't know, you don't know how to handle it until you actually have to handle it. Right. And so then you're better prepared if it ever happens again to know what to do or have a spare set of keys. And so I think he just learned from that experience. And even though it took a few years before they finally, encountered it again, they were well prepared, and then they just came right out of the West Virginia seemed to be unprepared for it. I don't know, to me it seemed like West Virginia, their players almost put more this is where the 1-0 mindset is, like, I know it gets obnoxious and annoying and you know it's the same thing every year, right? I don't mind it, but it just almost seemed like West Virginia thought they were going to win because they were playing the game at home. Like, that was just the vibe I got. Like, we want to win this game. We're playing at home. We're going to win. There was no mindset to it. It was just like, this is what's going to happen. And I think West Virginia is probably a better team than they were a season ago, but they're still not on that level with a Penn State, an Ohio State, even a Michigan.
Well, I think that they had such a belief that they believed the headlines. They believed, yeah, Pat McAfee. And, yes. You know, they thought they would ride the momentum. And you'll hear teams, coaches in multiple sports talk about the last couple minutes of the first half, the first couple minutes of the second half. Now, yep. You had a 2.5-hour gap between those, but you finished the first half with Penn State, you know, a quick score. And then you had them take the second half kickoff, march it down the field and score. I think that took all the starch out of West Virginia's team. At that point, they knew the game was over. I did want to ask you, I don't know how much of the actual game you saw. I don't think Neil Brown looked so good after the game with some of his comments about the officiating. And did you see the play, Omari Evans? He made the play downfield. It was a ball that was up for grabs. And the announcer said, could have been offensive pass interference called. Neil Brown had an issue with that. Then he had an issue with the touchdown catch, which that one I really don't understand. And then he was talking about how they were screwed by the replay officials when they had the advantage on two of those marks that were, I think, obvious mistakes. Long way of me asking, Dustin, as someone who's a neutral observer on these things, what did you see with those?
Yeah, I don't know that it's – I don't necessarily – I don't know how to put this. So I don't have a problem with him questioning officiating if there's a questionable call. But in that time, it wasn't like this was a one-score game. Like, it wasn't – to me, it wasn't like that was the determining play call, and it's a question, and that's what cost us the game. So to me – his gripes at the end of the game, like, it's just a bad, like, that's just excuse making at that point. And by and large, I don't have a problem usually with coaches talking about officiating. I think that they're human. I think that officiating is part of the game. If it wasn't a factor, why even have them? Right. But I'm with you, Jim. I don't know that he had really any complaints about, I mean, far be it from me. I don't know. I'm with you on this.
Well, I looked at it as the offensive pass interference. If they had called it, I would have had to say, well, yeah, I get it. He extended his arms. But pass interference, especially when, and Neil Brown even said this, that his player initiated the contact. Well, if the defensive player initiated the contact, you know what? You're allowing the hand fighting a bit. That,
yeah.
He extended his arm because the defender hit him. So you got to take that as part of it. Where I had the bigger issue with the officiating is the game is a fast game. Mistakes could be made on the field. Mm-hmm. But when you take it to the booth, I don't know if you saw, there were two plays where it went to the booth on the spotting of the ball. And one of them was on a fourth down, and West Virginia was given the first down. Now, this probably sounds like me being the Penn State fan griping. It's more about, I think, Neil Brown, you got two calls go your way that went to replay.
Sure.
You've just now given up the right to complain about other calls.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I mean, again, I think a lot of people will say, like, you had enough opportunities on the field. Don't talk about officiating. I don't have that much of a problem. But again, this was like Penn State dominated basically from the second quarter on. So what do you complain about your own players not playing well, not coaching well? Like, that was a far bigger issue. And this is where I get back to the mindset of, like, I just think that they thought they were going to win because, like you said, I think they read too much of the media hype. What's it, Nick Saban, rat poison, right? Like, they just bought into the fact that they were good enough to hang with Penn State when clearly they weren't. And I'm not saying they didn't put in the preparation. I'm not saying they don't work hard, but I just got the vibe that this was not like, I hate when they use the term business trip because I think it gets overused, but this didn't feel like a business trip. It just felt like, hey, we're here and we're going to win. That was literally what I got, the vibe I got.
And there was a lot of emotion in it. And I think maybe even with you, but last week I talked about the analogy of West Virginia looking a bit like Georgia Tech, you know, having that kind of veteran quarterback who can make plays and all that. Yeah. But the difference I thought was Penn State has more stars than Florida State does. And as you said earlier, you're going to start with a good defense on Penn State's side of the ball. You're not going to dominate them at the line of scrimmage the way Georgia Tech did to Florida State. All right, coming up quarter four, we've got Dustin's power rankings and a look ahead to next week. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number four. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. Before we get started with quarter four, Dustin, why don't you let our listeners know where they can find everything from Dustin Schutte?
Yeah, so I am at sportsillustrated.com/college/Purdue, where I cover Big Ten and Purdue. I'll throw in some Indiana in there, but I just came out with my Big Ten power rankings. Now that football season's officially underway, there'll be a lot more Big Ten content rather than just more of the Purdue-centric stuff. But we got plenty of stuff on Purdue. We got plenty of stuff on the Big Ten. So si.com/college/Purdue.
All right, let's hit your power rankings. And I have them listed right here in front of me. At the very top, you have Ohio State. Next up, Penn State. Number two, USC 3. Oregon 4, Michigan 5. Tell me about your top five and why they fell where they did.
Yeah, so I think, to me, Ohio State, even though they were pretty clunky in that first half against Akron, I think there were some raised eyebrows when it was 17-3 after the first 30 minutes, but they got it into gear. I think that there's still some adjustment with the offense. Chip Kelly, we talked about, you know, welcoming in Will Howard and having a new quarterback, so I think that played a factor. I think Penn State had, I think USC had the best win, but I also feel like Penn State maybe had the most impressive in the sense that they went on the road in week one. West Virginia was getting a lot of hype. That's a rivalry game. That's a game where Penn State never overlooks an opponent, but that's a game where almost a trap type situation, because you think West Virginia is very hyped up. They held West Virginia, what, like, was it 2.3 yards per carry, something like that? Like, it was under 100 total rushing yards and below 3 yards per carry. I know that. Offense, I thought the run game looked good. I think when Drew Aller was in a rhythm, he looked pretty good. Still got to make some improvements. And then USC, obviously. I still have some questions about their defense because I think LSU is going through a bit of change now that they don't have Jaden Daniels at quarterback. So, but their defense is obviously way improved. I think that those three teams were by far looked the most impressive in week one in the Big Ten. And then I have a little bit more faith that Oregon's going to get it figured out as opposed to Michigan. But I don't know who right now you would put above Michigan in that five spot, because again, outside of those five, we didn't really learn much from the other games.
No, we didn't. And by the way, West Virginia ended up netting out to 85 yards rushing.
Yeah.
And, you know, 160 yards throwing the ball. And going into the game, what we kept hearing about was the quarterback and two running backs. They were the only team in the country where they had three players returning who had over 700 yards rushing. So that was what we were supposed to fear, and it never came to fruition. All right, we listed the top five. The rest of them, Dustin, the rest of the teams, what stands out to you? I know the one that stands out to me is you have Washington 15th out of 18 teams. That stands out to me. Explain that to me, and also if there's anything else we should be looking at.
Yeah, I would say that UCLA and Northwestern to me are probably the two clear at the bottom. But as I put in those power rankings, I kind of give a little blurb as to why I rank each spot. This was a Northwestern team that also looked terrible last year in the opener against Rutgers. And rattled off 8 wins. So who knows with Northwestern? UCLA needed a late rally and then a game-winning field goal to beat Hawaii. So that I think that those two teams are pretty clearly at the bottom of the barrel. Washington is one of those teams that could skyrocket or maybe stay in that 15 to 18 range. And the reason I say that is because they played Weber State. They won convincingly 35-3. But I still am not, I think having Will Rogers is a big help, but I'm still not convinced that this is a team that has to replace 21 starters that's ready for life in the Big Ten just yet. I think Jed Fish will get him there. I think he's a good coach. But we'll see. That's one that to me is really hard to rank because we just, again, we still just don't know. They didn't do anything that was overly impressive to me against Weber State, but there wasn't anything where you're like, oh my God, this is the worst team in the Big Ten. So in a couple weeks, this could easily be a team that is into the top, you know, 7 or 8.
Well, also we'll find out in a couple weeks. They have Northwestern as their Big Ten opener, but after that, at Rutgers, home with Michigan, at Iowa. Later on in the season, they have USC, Penn State, and Oregon. So they will be tested. If they can win games with that schedule, they'll have earned it. One last kind of, well, I was ready to say off the field, though, but it's literally about the field, is Northwestern has set up, for those of you who aren't aware, they are like Penn State. They're doing a renovation to their stadium, but they're just shutting it down for 2 seasons. And they decided to put up a temporary field right on the lake on campus. What a fun way. I think it only seats like 15,000 people. Yeah. But some of the pictures from there were phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't play in your home stadium, at least you can get a great lakeside view. And you know what was funny is, so people who, I assume most people probably saw that in their introduction to the Big Ten, Oregon came to Indianapolis for Big Ten media days and brought their giant inflatable duck and put it on the White River, which runs through, you know, basically downtown Indianapolis. And I don't think Oregon plays here at Northwestern this year, but I think it's next year. They could take that big inflatable duck and just set it, and he could have the best view in the house. So it's a cool little thing. If you're not going to have, they tore down Ryan Field. If you're not going to have your home stadium, why not find a way to utilize that space? It's a really beautiful campus. I've never been there, but from what I've heard, it's a really beautiful campus. It's right off Lake Michigan. So yeah, I mean, why not utilize that space? At least they found a way to keep those games at home. They had been working. They're going to play 2 games at Wrigley Field. They had been working on potentially playing games at Lambeau, one of the soccer stadiums there, potentially Soldier Field. I think this is a much better use of space because people who are familiar with Northwestern, usually that space gets invaded by the opposing team's fans. So there's not you don't want to go into, you know, Soldier Field and have, of the 70,000 seats, 50,000 of them be Nebraska fans or Penn State fans or Ohio State fans. So this is a really good use of space. Keep it on your campus, and why not have a beautiful view?
And I think the games that they're not going to play there are Ohio State and Illinois, probably the two teams that would draw the biggest crowds. So, you know, go elsewhere where they're going to bring in 60,000 or whatever the number of fans is. All right, Dustin, in the last few minutes we have left, let's take a look at next week's games. And got to be highlighted, Texas at Michigan.
Yeah, that's the big noon game. I think that's the game that everybody's going to have their eye on. But the way Texas played in their opener, they blew out Colorado State. And the way Michigan looked in their opener, struggling against Fresno State, as we talked about, that's going to be an intriguing game. I don't think it's going to be really necessarily a lopsided game. I don't know that Texas is going to run away with it, but it might be like one of those games where I think it's pretty convincing that Texas is the better team. I know that they have to go on the road. I know that's going to be a tough environment to play in. But after what we saw from Michigan in that week one game, I just don't have the faith. I think Texas is, I don't want to say light years, but they're a step ahead of where Michigan is right now. I think that's fair.
I think they are also. And Texas is a 6.5-point favorite. That kind of interesting, just under a full touchdown. The other interesting game, and you alluded to it earlier, is Iowa State at Iowa. Iowa, 3-point favorite, which I'm assuming that's the home field advantage there. What do you think we're going to see from the Hawkeyes? Are they going to put up 40 points again?
No, I don't think so. But yeah, this is intriguing because Iowa State played North Dakota week one. That was kind of a low scoring 21-3 type of game. I think this is going to be a typical Iowa-Iowa State game where it's going to be something in the neighborhood of 16-13. I am really curious to see what the offense looks like against a competent defense. And I think Illinois State actually has a good defense. They just don't have the depth, obviously, at the FCS level. So I think that I think Iowa's defense and their special teams is who you think it is, right? Like, I think every year they're just going to be really good defensively. They're going to be really sound on special teams. This all comes down to the offense. They've had Iowa State's number for years now. I think that they'll probably win this game because they're on their home field, but you've got to see some improvement offensively. Which Iowa offense are we going to see? Is it going to be the one we saw in the first half against Illinois State, or the one we saw in the second half, or is it going to be somewhere in the middle? That's my biggest question going into this game, because if they are somewhere in the middle, Jim, watch out, because they don't have to have a top 15 defense or offense to be in conversation for the Big Ten championship game because of their schedule. If they're in the top 75, they might be okay.
And, you know, for Iowa, this is a huge game because we've often talked about it. Outside of Ohio State that they play, they could be favored in every other game that they play in Big Ten play. This is critical. Iowa fans got to think that they have a shot at the playoffs. This is a critical game for them. All right, really fascinating game, I think. Anytime Colorado and Deion Sanders plays, it's going to be interesting. But Colorado at Nebraska, those of us who are old enough to remember when that was a huge Big Eight game, okay? So it's Colorado at Nebraska. Nebraska, touchdown favorite right now, 7-point favorite. That is a game that can tell us a little bit more about Nebraska.
Yeah, I think so. And I think in that first game you saw from Colorado that their defense is not really that good. I think that they have really talented players at the skill position with, you know, Travis Hunter obviously being the highlight shooter. Sanders is a solid quarterback. And I know Colorado was 4-8 a year ago, so I don't know if this is going to be me talking out of both sides of my mouth or not, but I am. They've at least played in these type of games before, under the lights, big time atmosphere. Even if they got blown out, they've at least had experience playing in these games, right? This is where, how calm does Dylan Raiola look? This is because this is a different animal than UTEP, right? He got out of the first game jitters. This is a completely different environment, completely different animal. I think I think Nebraska's defense is good enough to win. I think that their offensive line has made solid improvements, and I think that their running game is good. How does Dylan Raiola handle the pressure?
It will be a fun watch. All right, Dustin went way too fast. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.